Mini episode 1914 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1914. You have with you here today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Ben Chu, Ben being our NBA hoops analyst. And we had to, of course, convene with Ben to discuss NBA expansion. It is now official that the league has a process going on for this. This has been something long awaited by Ben, as well as a lot of other basketball fans out there. And again, as I've been saying through the course of the year here, that now that we're into the 1900s on the mini episodes here, I try to find a tie into the subject matter. So 1914, all I can say is there have been some takes out there as far as why the NBA shouldn't do this. These are takes that have made Ben Chu say, this means war.
Rick, we made it to that time, I know, sadly, for better or worse, but.
Yes, we have. Yes, we have. The columns, these social media takes, whatever, they are, as far as you're concerned, the equivalent of the assassination of the Archduke Ferdinand.
I have to say, like, Howard Beck, who is he?
Yes.
Honest. Who is he?
Yeah.
But not, I will say, too, we're in an existing timeline, Rick, where we're seeing this is the first expansion timeline since Charlotte in 2004. So It's going to be a really interesting timeline. But,
well, I will say, and again, you look at the NBA expansion of the late 80s, early 90s, and that was a thing where you and I, of course, veterans of, go find it on Amazon, the top 75 players in pro basketball history. And
it's a good book. I know. It's a
quality book. Yes, yes. Those authors really had it going on. Yes, exactly. And it's a thing where one of the baselines in the book was looking at a ranking of the top players in the league year to year. And that was something, that was some discussions between you and I when it got to the mid to late 90s, the early 2000s. And no offense to somebody that I regarded as, you know, a very, very top-notch player at the time, like Keith Van Horn, as one of, like, the tippy-top players in the league at
that time. Let's not disrespect Keith Van Horn, though.
Okay, but, like, Sharif Abdur-Rahim and so many other guys, yeah. And it was like, what happened to them at a certain point?
I mean,
what happened
was Sharif is a great player, but
yes, I understand. But when the talent pool caught up, when the talent pool caught up to where they were at, that was kind of the end of them being the elite players of their time. So it's not that it's impossible for the NBA to overexpand. We've seen it before. I just don't know that, like, right now is necessarily a time that we'd be talking about. Plus, you and I have been charting on the show since 2020 in the league, the trends towards player development in the NBA, and more recently, the whole thing of, and I think that this was from last year's Pro Hoops Draftology. I had a column in there entitled Depth is the New Hotness. And so this is a thing where NBA teams are like, hey, what do you know? If we can actually go 1 through 9 or 1 through 10, there might be some merit in that. Amazing the lessons that they draw over a long period of time, right? Yeah. But anyways, you have rosters out there where teams are making it more of a priority to staff out even the further reaches of their rotation with quality players. I'm not saying for sure that the depth right now in the league is where you'd want it to be for something like this, but we've seen more fallow periods of depth previously in the league. We know this to be a fact.
Right. And one of the bigger things I will say too, Rick, is that there's a lot of people who's like, well, the talent is not good enough. Like, well, it actually is, because you see a lot of guys who are in the G League right now who are talented guys who could potentially be on an NBA roster.
Yeah.
And I think that's with it, any level of expansion, that's the problem. Everyone believes the single narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And the single narrative is like, there's not enough good players to be in the league. Like, well, we saw Mac McClung, we saw Yuki Kamura, we saw a lot of these other guys who are really good at the game of basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot tell me that they couldn't at least start on an NBA team in the short run.
Possibly, yeah. And again, depending on what organization they go to, because yeah, when you right. and I first started talking about this on the show back in 2020, yeah. That was the thing where at the time,
I can tell you, well, I will say this too, Rick, we're always ahead of all this stuff. So
just
so
we're always ahead of the curve, baby. Absolutely.
That's how we do. It's like we're always ahead of the curve.
Exactly. Denver and Miami were in the Final Four that year. That was the bubble year. And we were looking at that, and that was the commonality, is like, man, they develop players like few other teams in the league. San Antonio is a team that was like ahead of the curve with Popovich and the way that he developed players. But Denver, Miami, at the risk of being a homer, you got to put my Cavs in there with what they've done the last couple of years.
Yep.
Who was looking at guys like Sam Merrill as being anything special before he got there? Et cetera, and the way that Jalen Tyson has developed with them, et cetera, et cetera. So it's one of these things where the kind of players that you're talking about, if they end up in the right situation, you wouldn't bet against them necessarily. Now, I've always felt like with all sports that we're looking at things here where over the course of the last 30 to 40 years with the globalization that's happened, i.e. in the case of with the NHL, when the Iron Curtain fell and you started to get the Russian players coming over, more players from Europe. I've always felt like if there's any change in the sofa cushions, essentially, that's where it comes from. So what I want to ask you is, now that we're hearing about the NBA working more closely with, I don't know if you'd call it a takeover or whatever the case may be, but this whole thing with Eurobasket and more of the close affiliation with the European game, is that something that could really help with building up the talent pool enough at a time when you're going to need a little bit more to be able to justify expansion?
Well, Rick, I will say this is like, I feel like one of the biggest things in the expansion timeline, and I'll be honest too, is like, I have my own narratives because I grew up as a Seattle Sonics fan. But I will also say it's like people who constantly talk about there's not enough talent are like, no, that's not the case at all.
Right.
Because the leagues, especially in Eurobasket and in terms of all these other things, like there were really great players in that timeline.
Right.
And we'll just use real, like, I'll use the simplest scenarios. Like, so we all talk about Mac McClung, who was the guy who won three different sign-up classes.
Yep.
He can't even stay in the league. So you're not telling me in this timeline that he couldn't be a guy to be a starter on an expansion team.
Right.
Could be a starter. Yeah.
Absolutely. And
I think the problem is that there's a lot of people who believe this whole weird scenario is like, the NBA has not enough talent. I'm like, no, like, this is not 2020. You know, I was not 20, but this is 2004.
Yeah.
The game has grown so much in that timeline. So in my opinion, I'm like, look, there's a lot of great players in the league, and there are guys who could totally play as, like, you know, a bench guy in the league or a guy who is in the top five in that timeline. I will say it's like the expansion timeline is a lot of stuff that's just kind of, I'll be honest, Rick, crap. It's just people that are just trying to determine the best case scenario for them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of hot takes flying around about the NBA these days. One of them being, and again, I'm a big baseball guy, so you know if I'm saying that this is full of crap, that it is. The whole thing, like, MLB has passed the NBA by. Those are essentially from AI slot.
Rick, I'll say something at first because I love the NBA.
Yeah.
I appreciate the MLBs. They're on the come up right now.
They are.
I'm so happy for them.
They're narrowing the gap, but the gap is still there. And that's the thing where, again, you've got AI slop Twitter accounts on this, and quite frankly, any of the Outkick adjacent accounts that, let's be honest, a lot of these takes are coming from guys who are prone to using phrases like, he's one of the good ones. So it's not intellectually honest. that this is being said. It's not intellectually honest at all. So there's a lot of bad takes out there, and expansion should be no different. I do firmly believe that in the case of doing this, if you want to minimize the chances that this is going to damage the game, that it's going to pull down the game in terms of the talent pool, you must simultaneously, something we've talked about recently, but now it's an imperative, you must address tanking. You must disincentivize 100%. Tanking. You must come up with a system that disincentivizes it. Reason being, we already have proof out there that you could win with a team that on paper, you'd be like, how's that happening? And that being, I joke about this all the time. Jordy Fernandez is not exactly the right coach for Brooklyn because it's a thing where like they have to keep depleting the roster because he keeps getting the most out of them. He's one of these player development guys. He was in Sacramento with Mike Brown. I think he was in the Denver system. He was in the Cleveland system. This is a guy that you and I had looked at for a long time. Like, man, that guy, he's going to be a really good coach when he gets a job. And that's the thing. Like, he almost, you know, like Brooklyn's not winning much in the time since he's been there, but they've almost won too much since he's been there. If you turn him loose with a lot of the guys that they have on that roster, you'd look at it and say, this is not a team that's going to win too many games. I mean, he might take that team and make them even sort of borderline play-in. I'm not saying that he could take this team and get it to like the 10 seed, but it's not impossible, Ben. And you need to allow for that.
I think that's crazy. And
yeah, you need to allow for that.
Where the Brooklyn Nets are going through their own things. But I think, especially the league right now, they are very focused on trying to fix this at some point.
Yes.
After they got called out on, it's weird to say like Reddit and the world, but it's part of it. We're going to be honest. Like, look, when I don't want to call out Utah because I think Utah's a really great organization, but when you rest your two best players in the fourth quarter of a game on the road, that's not a good sign.
It's not a good sign at all. They are definitely
game in that timeline.
No, it's not.
And we've discussed this too. It's like, I am a proponent of someone. It's like, if you tank, you tank. It's okay.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, even I am like, that's too much.
Well, exactly. And that's where, again, you've got to simultaneously disincentivize this because, again, if you don't disincentivize tanking and you bring these teams into the league, then you're looking at them being in the plus or minus 16 win range for as far as the eye can see because they're going to be trying to do that. It's not necessarily that the roster itself is going to determine that because, again, this is a thing where we talked about this before, depth among a lot of the better teams in the league right now. Like, if they go by the way it went in the past where you can only protect eight guys, like, I know I'm sitting here as a Cavs fan cringing and like, I don't want to have to lose so-and-so. And fans of other top teams are saying the same thing. And I'm not saying that these guys are necessarily, like, they can be the anchor of a much better team. No, almost certainly not. But you could craft a perfectly plausible starting lineup. I mean, not one that's going to win you like a whole bunch of games, but I mean, you can take the guys that are just outside the top eight of like the Cavs and some of these other teams in the league and win 30 games if you have the right coach. Yeah. Absolutely. And in this day and age of player development,
just like I've seen some of the projected expansion drafts, like we're seeing Tyler Hero,
contracts. That's right.
If you're an NBA team, like, this would be an okay scenario. So I feel like that's part of it. But my bigger thing is that I think we all know this was going to be a foregone scenario on timeline. So,
well, and you raise a very interesting point. Is there any way, for example, that so we're looking at Las Vegas and Seattle coming in as the expansion teams. Any way that the Las Vegas expansion team can work out a cooperative deal with what might be their arena partners, the Vegas Knights. Think back to what they did.
I know Foley, as you know, Rick, is probably one of the guys who is in the mix right now for the Vegas team. So.
Well, exactly. But like the way that they did it, as far as the manipulation of contracts And they were even doing things like, well, we won't take such and such if you trade us such and such or whatever. Like those type of deals, like that type of wheeling dealing, that could really do it. But you're right. Guys like Tyler Hero, who are very, very, very good players, but might be considered by their teams to be overpaid in terms of the contracts that they have. Yes, this could be an avenue for something like that. How many players around the league are there in terms of these type of contracts and stuff? I mean, I will say this, like, if you're looking at like 2 years from now and Philly tries to put Joel Embiid out there, I think the two teams, they might say, nice try, Philly.
They may say nice try, but someone will be like, well, why not? You know?
Well, let's yeah. Yeah, exactly. So,
and I'll say too, like, one of the bigger things too, Rick, is like, this is, we have not had expansion in the NBA since the Bobcats in 04. So.
Right.
It's a very unique time.
Well, and that was one of those weird one-shot deals like the NFL had back in 02 with the Houston Texans. That was because they needed to get back to an even number after bringing the Browns back in 99. And it's one of those things where, again, in terms of the Browns coming back in 99, certainly you have to be hoping from a Sonics fan perspective that it's not going to be the same thing, but they're going to get back their name and colors and all that kind of crap. And I have seen, you talk about rage bait. Like, so there were some Oklahoma City honks that were on Twitter that were like, Seattle owes us an apology before they get it back for smearing our name.
Can I say that? Can I say the answer to that question?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Done. Yeah. Yeah. Homie, don't play that.
Question is no.
To use a 90s reference. And, but again, Seattle, I mean, it really sort of the Cleveland Browns of the NBA in terms of a beloved hometown team getting ripped away. And that's a thing where, again, I feel like push comes to shove. I mean, you tell me, but it's a thing where I know that Seattle has now won two Super Bowls, but I mean, right. All things being equal, heart of hearts in that town, the Sonics are number one and probably always will be, right? Every city's got a team like that. For Cleveland, God help them, it's the Browns. For Seattle, I think it's the Sonics. And I think it's just hard for those teams to compete with.
Rick, just so you know, I feel like there is a mid-transition because there's a lot of people in the region who grew up as Seahawks fans.
Sure.
So I'm not
going
to disrespect that, but...
Okay.
There's a lot... The region in... Pacific Northwest, I would say.
Yeah.
Your basketball fans. That is what it is, you know.
Well, and it's one of those things where, again, I know there was the Seattle Pilots of 69, but essentially it was, you know, the Mariners coming in 77 is what started that. And then the Seahawks coming in 76. It's part of the whole thing. You never forget your first love. The Sonics were there first. Course, they planted their flag. The Pacific Northwest hadn't had, an NBA team. But, you know, they come in more or less at about the same time as Portland, and that ends up being a pretty nice rivalry over the years, a rivalry that will be refurbished once
again,
the Sonics are back.
I'll also say, too, for Portland, like, I don't want to disrespect that timeline because that was a very unique timeline in the league.
It was, yes. And the thought of those cities, again, having a real type of rivalry is potentially very exciting. It was the kind of thing where, because again, there was the overlap in the late 70s as far as the 77 Blazers winning the championship, the Sonics winning the Western Conference title in 78 and the NBA title in 79. And then it looked like we were about to get that again in the mid to late 2000s between Greg Oden and Kevin Durant. And two different things happened to make sure that Seattle and Portland
would not have that run. You're a Blazer fans, Rick.
Yeah.
For the timeline of Greg Oden, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Brandon Roy, 60 and 19.
Yeah.
So if they say and healthy, you never know.
Well, the alternate timeline is wild as far as, like, if Oden stayed healthy, if Seattle stayed in Seattle, I mean, you know.
Just tell the youngins who...
Yeah.
Randomly come across this episode, like, look, just watch Brandon Roy, please. Just watch.
Yes. Well, you needed him to stay healthy as part of the scenario too. Although, strangely enough, this is only the second strangest alternative reality thing I've pondered this week. Our great friend from the Sports Talk Network and fellow FDH Lounge dignitary Jake Digman yesterday proposed to me the whole notion of if Bret Hart stayed in WWF in 97. I'm like, okay, well, Owen Hart is still alive. Yeah, Owen Hart is still alive. He's probably coming back today to wrestle in a memorial tournament for somebody else rather than there being an Owen Hart memorial tournament. And all these things, Shawn Michaels and whatever, all these things are different. That's a crazier timeline, but it's still a crazy timeline to think of the Pacific Northwest in the 2010s if things had broken differently. Maybe this is a different chance, you know, for that. Maybe it happens in the 2030s as far as these cities. Reestablishing this, Portland appears to be on the comeback trail at this point in time here for Seattle. The devil is going to be in the details on getting expansion right, as it will be for Las Vegas. And it really is a scenario, as you look at this here, where there's a lot of intrigue based on somebody from the West is going to have to go to the East to make this happen here. The common thought right now is that it will either be Minnesota or Memphis. At the risk of being a bit of a hipster, there is a football rivalry, and I think there was a basketball rivalry in the 70s between New Orleans and Atlanta. So, I mean, I know New Orleans, they're not the easternmost city, I don't believe, of those three. But, I mean, to put New Orleans in the same division with Atlanta is nothing to sneeze at necessarily. Although, again, geographically, they fit very close to the Texas teams, obviously. Sure. And that would be Memphis also, and what we have is the Southwest Division right now. And then I will say, too, there's going to be some furious lobbying in the league office because you and I have talked about this. It'll either be four divisions of eight or eight divisions of four. I'm on record as I want four divisions of eight. I think that would be pretty primo. But there will be furious lobbying in the league office by Oklahoma City and the three Texas teams not to put OKC back in with them, which they should be, by the way. Get them out of the Northwest Division. What are we doing here? But like the way that San Antonio and Houston have already turned it around, Dallas is going to in another year or two with Cooper Flagg being there, and they're poised to get one of the top picks this year. Holy cow. If they get one of these top guys to add to Cooper Flagg and some of the other young players that they have there, I mean, that whole thing, the three Texas teams along with Oklahoma City, that would be basketball's toughest division right off the bat here. And Minnesota, I think, does kind of fit in geographically. They're not too far from Milwaukee. So, I mean, that could be something that could become a little bit of a geographic rivalry, depending on how long it takes Milwaukee to turn it around after they trade Giannis, that is. But you could be looking at some really, really interesting scenarios here as far as how this goes. And that more or less, I think, you know, sort of like not exactly the four corners of the country per se, because you're probably looking at a West Coast division that probably goes all the way up. You're probably going from Southern California, I'm guessing, all the way up to Seattle, probably loop in Denver. They might try to keep, and I think that this would be understandable if so. The neatest geographic way to do it in a four divisions of eight kind of thing might be to put Las Vegas and Seattle in the same division, but methinks they might flinch from that for competitive purposes, Ben.
Yeah, I will say, too, on top of that, Rick, like, it feels like the league, if it goes to 32 teams, because, like, nothing is guaranteed in this timeline. Right. But I would say, too, it's like they're going to do a very similar scenario to the NFL in this current timeline, where they have a division scenario, where, like, a 14. So,
yeah,
we'll see. I will say, like, as a person who was a Sonics fan, like, this is the first really, really, really legit scenario for expansion since the pandemic timeline. So,
yeah. Well, and what's going to be very interesting,
a lot of people that will not believe this scenario. It's like, it is what it is, but
yeah. Well, I mean, I will say, for the cynics who are saying they're doing this about money, yeah, no shiznit, Sherlock. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, whether or not there are.
I'll say this out of courtesy, because you know I am someone who will never do that, but
yeah,
it's about money.
It is, and I think here's the thing too. Locking it in right now, because it's one of those things here where, again, if you're one of these cynics out there that believe that, like, the lizard people in the world know what's coming, like, the NBA locking it in now on this and getting that money now, the NFL reopening the TV contracts rather than waiting another couple of years to try to get more, like, everybody seems to have a sense that, like, things economically could go be going off a major cliff in the next year or two or three. That's part of what I read from this. Let's get the money now while we can. That's my sense of it, is that they know something's coming, enough of them anyways, and that's why they want to lock it in now. But when you look at it, when you're looking at the untold amounts of money, that, like, what, could be 7 to 10 billion potentially on this. And that's where, again, from here on in, from now until the end of time, you're going to be cutting in the, you know, like, the TV money will now go 32 ways instead of 30, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what the other owners are giving up in this sense. But it's a thing where I seem to remember that, like, I think, like, when Vancouver came into the league, that, like, they didn't get the top pick, I don't think. So it's a I think in some of the previous expansion that you weren't necessarily put in the mix for the top pick. So it's a thing where, but that's, it seems like that's untenable to me, that if it's a scenario where you're paying 7 to 10 billion, like, it's going to have to be a coin flip, at least the first year, between these two teams. Who's going to be one? Who's going to be two when the lottery starts at three? I mean, it has to go that way, doesn't it?
On some level, yes. I will also say, too, because we're talking basketball, I know the WNBA is expanding right now.
Yes.
They have their expansion draft on April 4th between Portland and Toronto. So I feel like it may be a similar scenario, Rick, but we just don't know in this timeline. So at least just to tell all the people who are watching this episode, that there is a scenario where they're doing a flip of a coin to determine the top expansion pick and the top draft pick in this timeline for where they're seated, essentially. So and at least for the WNBA, it's like it's going to be 6 and 7. So we're going to see what happens at the end of the day with that. But I will say, too, especially in this house, like, one of the big things I did want to know is, like, there's a lot of people that's like, well, it's not going to happen, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, there's multiple sources in this timeline, Rick. It's going to happen. We don't know what the year is yet.
Yeah.
But it is going to happen.
It is going to happen. We've been talking about this for some period of time. And again, I think we've been talking about this on this show probably dating back to, at minimum, the late 2010s. As far as the scenario of expansion, it is interesting that, like, how long it can take to resolve some of these issues with the NFL.
I mean, Rick, too, I don't want to interrupt, but it's also part of the CBA in this timeline, too. So.
It is. It's part of the CBA as well. But it took the NFL about 20 years to get back to L.A. And then, of course, like, which was ridiculous, like, you know, you can't be a league on the level of the NFL and not have a team in a market like L.A. But the thing of it is, and the lesson that we should have learned from history is that, again, because L.A., it's a town where, like, I could be going to the beach on an October Sunday, that kind of stuff. Put one team there. The NFL drags their feet for 20 years and says, we're putting two teams there. So the minute that greed starts to get involved, all common sense goes out the window. So who knows how these things are going to go.
Can I say, like, one thing I haven't said this in a while? It's like,
okay,
to quote Chuck Rory for the great game show, greed. Greed is good.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And, like, who's going to want to bid for these teams if they're not going to have a chance of getting the top pick in the year that they come in? Because you have to be selling hope to these cities here, especially to Seattle. Like, Seattle doesn't want to get a team back and be the dregs for the first 6 or 7 years. Because, again, they're going
to
be
constantly... Can I make the argument, Rick? Because I have to make the argument.
Yeah.
I think at a point when you get... how do I put this properly? When you're devoid of a team for over 20 years, it doesn't
matter. Yeah. Well, and not only that. I mean, a team that left for Oklahoma City and again made it to the NBA Finals in a couple of years. And again, something we've been talking about on this show since 2012, the inexplicable trade of James Harden at that period of time. Like, so we're going to pay Serge Ibaka instead of James Harden. When, first of all, you could have paid both. Second of all, if you're going to choose one, I said at the time you chose the wrong guy. But anyways, the Seattle people are going to be going, we could have had that team. We could have had what we had ripped from us was Durant and Westbrook and Harden. And now we get this team that is basically the basketball equivalent of AI slop. They're not going to want to sit through that. The nightmare scenario for Sonic fans, what they've got to be thinking about right now is when you talk about, you know, downtrodden fans of a team, again, the Browns. What happened when the Browns came back in 99 and what came after that? The NBA has to be working to avoid that at all costs. Also, the NBA doesn't want a loser in Vegas. They absolutely want a competitive team in Vegas as quickly as they can get it, because in the winter months, again, this is the whole thing too. It's about who gets to a market first. And the Vegas market loves the Knights. It's a thing where, because not only were they successful right off the bat, the timing of it was weird. Right when they came in, it was the tragic, still unsolved mass shooting in Las Vegas, to use that Sopranos phrase, whatever happened there. But it was at a very, very raw time emotionally for the town, and the team came in and lifted the spirits and whatever. So the Knights are that team in Vegas the same way that the Sonics were in Seattle. Right, they planted their flag first. They got the loyalty of the hometown people, and it will be the Knights that this still unnamed team will be competing with the most directly, because it'll be in the same winter months and could very well be in the same arena. That is yet to be determined. But again, the ownership group on both these things here, Magic Johnson supposedly going to be a part of the ownership group for Las Vegas one. LeBron, I guess, has bowed out of that one already, may be an indicator that he's not ready to retire yet. So a lot of things yet to be determined about who's going to get these slots here as far as ownership goes. The only thing that we know is the obvious right now, which is y'all better have bottomless pockets if you're going to be doing this for what it's going to cost you.
Can I talk, Rick? I feel like I want to talk on expansion now. It's one of those rare scenarios. I know a lot of information.
You've been waiting so many years. Yeah, this is pent-up energy.
I've been sitting on this for a while I want to focus on Vegas now, as you know. Like Bill Foley, who's the Las Vegas Knights owner, there's a discussion that he's putting an offer out there, but I also know OVG, which is one of the bigger, arena proprietors.
Oh, yeah.
Is also trying to focus in on that. So if we talk to that scenario, it is what it is. Yeah. For Seattle, I think it's a very honest bid, because it's going to come from the people who are, Rick, we will say, it's the Kraken folks in terms of like Samantha Holloway and all those people. So,
well, I feel like
everyone is talking about the franchise fee. It's like, I don't feel like that matters at this point, in my opinion. The bigger question is if the other owners in the league want to defer expansion or just accept expansion in 2028. That's being honest. Like, because there's no way, in my personal opinion, that a team in Seattle is not going to at least get $8 billion, and a team in Vegas is not going to get $8.5 billion. At least that's the low margin,
minimum. Yeah, minimum. And
there's no way.
For any of these adorable folks out there, they're like, maybe Nashville's going to get a team or something like that. Like that. That's the whole thing. Is it like you don't have the amount of bottomless money bags in some of these other cities that you do in a tech city like Seattle and in a city like Las Vegas. And so, and again, and it makes the most sense anyways, because Vegas, now that basically, the prohibitions that the leagues have had against gambling are like completely gone now to a comical degree, to where leagues are like, oh my God, we might have to do something about the fact that players are throwing games, So Las Vegas, Yeah. Now that they are open for business, so to speak, it is sort of the equivalent of like the 20 years that the NFL wasn't in LA. It becomes a glaring thing of like, if you're a serious league, you must have a team in Las Vegas because all the other three leagues are there first. This is actually going to be the fourth one here, considering that the A's already have their deal for moving to Las Vegas. So you've got that. You've got Seattle getting their team back. And everything just kind of fits in those ways. And ultimately, it becomes a matter where there's going to be, of course, again, a great expectation that both of these teams are going to be competitive as quickly as possible. And I think this goes to, again, how the league kind of structures these things here expansion-wise. We looked at it in 2018, and again, when I talked about what a great job the Vegas Knights did as far as their wheeling and dealing, their ability to pick up guys on contracts the teams felt were subpar, the whole thing of like, we won't claim this guy if you trade this guy to us, that whole kind of a thing. By the time that the Seattle Kraken came in, the league was like, I don't know if we want to be as nice to them, which I don't think it was the league being overly generous to Vegas. Yeah. I think it was them being geniuses as far as how they went about it. Nevertheless, it was a harder task for the Kraken, and you see how that's gone. It's similar to what happened to the Brownies in the late 90s after the immediate success of Jacksonville and Carolina. Both of those teams make it to Championship Sunday in their second year of existence. So the league was in no mood to do the Browns any favors. So it's all about sort of where the pendulum lies as far as the league owners go. And the league owners at this point in time in the NBA, because it's been 20 years since expansion, and because there are no bitter memories of having been too generous to Charlotte at that time, I think we're looking at a scenario here where, again, knowing the amount of money that's at stake, for having a serious team in Seattle and in Las Vegas as soon as possible, I think that the league is going to be fairly generous in these ways. I don't expect them to scale it back to protect seven players instead of eight. I think it'll be the standard eight, but I think it'll be a thing where both teams will be free to be in the mix for the top pick. I think the top pick might actually come down to one of those two teams, and maybe the loser of a coin flip would have the second pick. I think the league is going to be generous to them because for the amount of money that's at stake here, not just unprecedented, but hugely unprecedented money in the world of sports as far as what they're going to be able to rake in these very unique circumstances.
Well, Rick, you know, I have my own ties in this timeline, but if I remove myself from that, it's like, you cannot tell me that a league doesn't want at least $16 billion going to coffers.
Right.
And at least be in terms of like the top serving, you know, revenue teams in the league. Like, that's ridiculous. That's just dumb math at that point.
Yeah, and like it's going to take many TV contract cycles out there to lose back that amount of money on that once they've pocketed it. And so the league owners, they have a chance to make a really, really, really sweet deal here. And again, going to have to potentially deal with some headlines in the short term. There's going to be some speculation about, is it going to water it down? But what will be very, very interesting is, again, we've seen the last couple of cycles here with the Olympics, just how competitive, you know, some of the different teams have been. And that only seems to be going up. It's not that the United States won't be an overwhelming favorite, or not overwhelming, let's say a strong favorite in Los Angeles in 2028, but some of these other teams there. And I actually think that that is going to color the psychology of it a little bit. The Olympics happening right before the expansion teams come in, if that timeline sticks. I think that having more teams in the Olympics that are really making noise, I think that will put to rest some of this notion of like, the world is a finite place. There are only so many players that are qualified to be NBA players. I think the Olympics, you heard it here first, that may color the perception, and that may soften the runway kind of coming into that season for the league in terms of that perception.
Rick, I'm going to come out. You know me. I am a very specific human being.
Yeah.
And I'll say it's like, I appreciate your narrative that people who talk about NBA expansion and they talk about like, well, there's not enough talent. They don't actually watch the NBA.
No, they don't.
Period.
No, they don't.
They do not. There are people who love to see that scenario. And I'm like, again, I know I have my own ties, but at the end of the day, it's like, You're not telling me some of these guys who are off the bench who are scoring 20 or 30 points in a random NBA game is not good enough.
Well,
you're literally disrespecting those players in that timeline.
Very much so.
In my opinion.
Very much so. And I will say this also, too. It's up to you how much meat you want to put on the bones of what I'm about to say here. But you and I have had conversations off air. This is going back years of where I relate to you these crazy things that I have read from like top NBA media people. And your standard response to me always is, Rick, you'd be shocked at how little basketball these people actually watch. And we're talking top people in the biz. And that what they're fueling their takes on is not actual game watching in many different instances here. So this is a thing where, again, you really, really, really have to pick and choose where you're getting your information from if you're going to be a smart consumer, i.e. shows like this. Can I say that? Shows like this?
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, we were talking about player development becoming a big thing back in 2020, years before it really
Rick, we were one of the first people outside of, like, maybe one of our podcasts that did that.
Yeah.
And the bigger thing too is like I don't want to disrespect the major media markets. I don't want to disrespect other analysts, but I hate to say it, these people do not actually watch basketball games.
Yeah.
They don't watch them.
Yeah. I mean, it just
they make analysis from these things. Like I guarantee you, I'll talk about like Bill Simmons, Howard Beck. They are not actually watching NBA games right now.
I mean, that's a thing where, and I will say, I mean, like, and I'm not going to say who this is because the last thing that I do on this show is disrespect guests of the show. But there was a guest of the show that said something one time about basketball. And I remember like running back to you with it. And you were like, yeah, even that guy probably doesn't watch as much basketball as you think. I'm like, what? You know? So it's like, it's crazy. It just is just,
I said, I don't want to disrespect anyone because I have a high level of respect for Bill Simmons, Howard Beck, the Ringer team, and all these other people who do this analysis daily.
Sure.
Yeah. They are great people. I'm not disrespecting them. But I also feel like we're existing in a media world where everyone is criticizing everything. And that's sad in my opinion.
Well, and like I've been saying for years, as far as like the Ringer goes, their whole propensity for hipsterism it seems to be worse with basketball than in a lot of different areas. But I remember, like, I don't remember who exactly this was a couple of years ago. I don't remember if this was Luka back in the early 2020s. But like, there was maybe it was Giannis. But like, if this player came on the market, I remember like, and they did this article of like, you know, who's one guy you wouldn't want to trade for him is Jaylen Brown. And it's like, okay, Jaylen Brown has subsequently gone on to become a league MVP candidate this year. But like,
disrespect Jaylen Brown. He's a great player.
No, but like, do you know how insane it was to have said that? This was like in 2021. Yeah. Like, it was insane. Like, they throw stuff out there, I think, a lot of times just to be part of the outrage machine.
Well,
one of the
bigger things too, Rick, and I'll say too, is like, with the FDH Lounge, we always try to be as honest and not partial in the best we can be. And I know you're a Cleveland fan. I'm a Seattle fan.
We disclose our
bias. We have been in this weird timeline where we're like, it may not be the best, but we also understand our own biases in this timeline.
Yeah. I mean, when we disclose our biases and we try not to be, you know, captains, you know, to be hostage to it. And it's a thing where, like, I'm on my part. I mean, I haven't been afraid to be critical over a period of time. I'm a guy where I went on record that, like, when the Harden-Garland trade first happened, I was like, what the hell are they doing? Now, I was wrong, and thankfully I was wrong. But I'm not afraid to sit here and say, what are they doing? So that's the thing where,
Wait, can I say something? I'm really saddened that we have to talk about other criticisms when I should be talking more about the WNBA is expanding to 16 teams with Portland and Toronto.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about this other stuff, but like, you know.
Well, and again,
I feel like we're at a timeline, Rick. We're not intellectually honest anymore. Everyone has their own brand now. So
yes, okay. That is true. That is true. And we've always tried to be exceptions to that, the fact that the world is not intellectually honest. We try to go against that as much as we can. And that's where, again, the NBA expansion thing. So, again, this whole notion of, like, you know, OMG, finite number of players in the world. Not true. Absolutely not true. No. But the circumstances are going to be what they make them, essentially. So, again, if player development continues to become a big trend in the league and depth on rosters and things like that, that will be helpful. If the NBA's greater ties to Europe help in a greater development of European players to come over here, that will be helpful. This resurgence that we've seen in college basketball the last couple of years.
Can I say this too?
Yeah.
That's part of why I feel it's disrespectful, because college basketball has been fantastic this season.
Yes. Yes, it is. It is. And it has been a thing where we've talked about this, though, like the regular season used to be the most disposable throwaway thing, and it's not anymore. And it's a thing where, and I, as far as, like, again, you know, the chicken or the egg, I don't know on this, but like the fact that, like, so many college basketball games have become part of network primetime TV, largely because you and I have talked about in our other capacity on this show of talking about the streaming business and things since COVID. Yeah. They're like the leagues, you know, networks looking for cheaper things than new sitcoms and especially new hour-long dramas. And like, hey, we can put Big East basketball in primetime. I remember, like, the first couple times I saw that, I'm like, you're going to put Creighton Butler on primetime, like a primetime Saturday night?
It's understandable, though.
Yeah, look at the way that it's going. The college basketball is hotter than it's been in a long time. This is not recency bias, because I'm saying this in late March.
I don't think anyone disrespect college basketball in the summer.
No, absolutely not.
I know the tournament hasn't been, you know, they haven't had the level of upsets in recent memory, but it's a good year so far.
Well, I mean, you say that, but as I'm glancing up at the TV right now, I'm looking at Iowa, Nebraska. So I mean, I don't think a lot of us had those teams there. But you're right. It's been pretty chalky thus far. This is one of the great exceptions to the chalk. But that's the whole thing here too. Is that, like, in the college game, I would dare say that you're potentially seeing more guys who can at least be contributors at the NBA level being developed right now. So it really is a situation where, again, it's going to be sort of what the basketball world makes of it. And we keep coming back to this again. But again, you've got to find a viable way to discourage teams from tanking, and not to try to prohibit tanking.
And we'll talk about this in the future.
Yeah, sure. But like, the world works on incentives and disincentives. I always say that it's incentives and disincentives. You cannot, right now, they're trying to use a mallet and just kind of squash any examples that they see of it. Like what you said, the very egregious examples with Utah earlier that you identified, that is only going to get you so far. Teams are incentivized to try to get some of these star players here. That's why we talk about the process, trust the process and everything like that. It needs to go away. It needs to be something where, whether you take my idea and you make it where you try to do the reverse incentive, you do a tournament of the teams that didn't make the playoffs, and the winner of the tournament gets the first pick, whether it be that or other things here. The league needs to find a way to sort of incentivize so that Seattle and Vegas aren't the dregs forever when they come in. Because I guarantee you, the league doesn't want that. The league does not want them to come in and be the dregs.
I'll say too, it's like,
yeah,
I love the NBA. I'm a fan. I've watched this league for 20 years.
Yeah.
Watching some of these games where you're clearly tanking, it is not fun.
Just I agree.
It's not fun. And yeah. I understand why teams are incentivized. And I am a person that's like, I don't think tanking is as bad as people say it is.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can incentivize people to not tank, that's a good scenario.
That's absolutely what you want. So it's going to be what the league does with it from here. The devil's going to be in the details, but I'm here to tell you, and I know you agree with this, that if the league gets enough of these things right in the course of this process, this is going to work out very well. The competitive level of the league is not going to dip. And as a matter of fact, it will be a net gain if tanking becomes disincentivized in the process. If, as part of the necessary thing of trying to help Seattle and Vegas get a boost coming into the league, if that gives a boost to the other really bad teams in the league here to where they're not as bad anymore because they're not deliberately bad, we've got a net better product coming out of
this. And can I say, it's just like there's a lot of people out there and it's like, oh, we're expanding the two teams to make things worse. Like, no, that is an opportunity to adjust the current scenario.
Right. Well, and that's what it is, right?
You know, they don't care. They're just, it is what it is.
Well, I mean, and all of us, and like, and I can say this as somebody recently who has really sort of benefited from the whole thing of just like making lists of stuff to get done. Those of us that have been sort of like either procrastinators or things fall through the cracks or this or that or whatever, like the NBA has been like, tanking being an issue. We'll get to that when we get to it. All of a sudden, you don't have the luxury of that anymore. By doing this, you no longer have the luxury of ignoring the warts on your own product at this point in time. The entire game has to be raised in order for you to have the margin of error to bring in two more teams, in order for you to risk diluting the talent pool, which, as you and I are predicting, won't be the case. No. That there are enough players out there.
Rick, I'm just going to come out and say it's like, when people argue that, that's really the dumbest argument.
Yes.
There is no way in this timeline that you couldn't tell me that you couldn't get 10 guys who could be starters in today's NBA. Period.
Right. Yeah. Period. Yeah. And again, if you have the right kind of coach, and that is going to be a huge part of this as well. The two expansion teams, they need to be looking for their own versions of Jordy Fernandez if they can find them out there. Guys who, and again, it'll be a different scenario. Like they're pulling back the reins on him as they have been from day one in Brooklyn. Don't win too many games. But if you find a guy like that, who's actually incentivized to try to win with young guys and be a guy who can really get the most out of them, then you're going to be in the spot you want to be in. And in a situation where you can be making an immediate mark in these cities. And I promise you, the NBA prioritizes that as part of the process. If for no other reason, then again, they know that, again, they have to give these teams their money's worth. Because I think there's going to be some push and pull in the negotiations here, too.
And I know it's not like you, Rick. We're going to be talking about this in the summer months. Because I know that's around the rough timeline when.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, well, we'll know more about it by then. But like, nobody's writing a check for $8.5 billion on the IFCOM. They're going to want to know what they're getting for that money. The right. NBA is going
and
to
I
have
feel like
to
that's
deliver.
More leaning towards Vegas and Seattle on this timeline. So
absolutely.
You know, my bigger thing is like, it's not a guaranteed scenario. It's not a done deal. But we've talked about expansion for a while now, especially on this show.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably the closest we've ever seen it. So.
Sure. Yeah, it's finally happening. The league is now officially acknowledging that it is going to happen with this process here. Again, I's to be dotted, T's to be crossed, but we booked this segment here because we crossed the Rubicon on this thing. It was a point where the league wasn't like, we'll get to it at some point, which is what they've been saying for like 15 years now. This is finally putting the ink on it, so to speak, here. So the league going ahead, making this happen, and this will be something that we'll be tracing over a period of time. But those are my thoughts on it here. Anything else with expansion that we didn't get to from your perspective, Ben?
At least not yet, but the big thing I do want to know, because I know there are some because they were very specific with Seattle and Vegas, I do want to posit out there, Rick, that if those expansions go through, the next two teams will be overseas.
Interesting.
Could be Mexico City, Montreal, Vancouver. We'll see what happens.
I would tend to agree with you. It'll be somewhere outside the United States. And I think that would be the next step here. Depending on the amount of post-regime fall rehabilitation. Could it be Havana, Ben Chu? Could it be Havana?
I mean, the quota, you know. Havana, who knows? So I was like, I know there is a small group of people who watch a lot of these episodes. They're like,
yeah.
Dude, I'm just happy we earned the expansion timeline for the NBA. It's been a long time. Even if I don't have ties to a team, even if you remove that.
That's right.
I'm happy. It's been since 04.
That's right. And it's a thing where the expansion teams, they'll be within a certain radius of this country here. It's not going to be that far away because, again, it's like, even if we get the situation settled by the time of expansion, you still won't be taking a cruise to Hormuz to watch NBA action, Ben Shoot. It'll be somewhere tethered like to this continent. Yeah.
I appreciate you. You're my friend, but just waiting to show I, my friend. If the songs come back, you already know what it is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's a happy day for you.
But even I have to be, like, impartial at the time.
I'm thrilled for you. I'm really, really thrilled for you. You deserve this. All Sonics fans deserve this. And you were a good sport when I made the joke last spring that I wanted to see Game 7 in Oklahoma City when the game was done. I wanted to see some old guy holding up a sign that said, I waited since 1979 for this.
You were a good sport. I have no beef of OKC in this timeline. So
especially once you get your team back. So, yeah, so that'll be something to look forward to. But always a treat to break down NBA with you, Ben Shu. Really appreciate it. Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1914.